Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser. I'm joined alongside by my man, DT, Darius Terrell. You guys can listen to the Horns Cast channel. You guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. We're sorry that it's been quite a while since we have recorded an episode. Darius and I, we have both been having a lot of stuff going on in our personal lives. Our day jobs have been taken over. We're both moving into new houses. A lot of stuff's been going on. There's also a little bit of a lack of a Longhorn football news going on. So we're sorry. We're getting back into the swing of things now. We got one last week of minimal content, but we're making it up to you guys with Calvin Anderson coming on, joining us for this podcast to give his views on the NFL and his memories coming to Texas in the year that he was here. So without further ado, let's get right into this. So now on the line, we have former Longhorn left tackle Calvin Anderson, who will also be here in Austin March 7th and 8th at Westlake High School for his football camp, the Legacy Football Camp for offensive linemen in the state of Texas. I highly recommend going and checking that out. Calvin, my man, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm enjoying my first offseason. You know, excited about year one, but also even more excited about year two. So now I'm proud to be representing Texas both in university and state.
We know that you just got your food right before we got on this call. So the first question we're going to ask you is one that actually was specifically asked by us to ask you. And honestly, I think I'm going to start asking it to every person who comes on the show. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Is a hot dog a sandwich? Okay, so I'm going to have an interested take on this. I think, well, actually, let me make sure this is credible before I... Okay, so I think, I would say it's not a sandwich because, and I'll feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to make sure I'm not going back on something I already believe, but I think in order to be a sandwich to me, the bread can't be connected. So it's two individual pieces of bread, whatever's inside. But I think that if the bread's separated from the sandwich, if it's connected, then we're looking at something else, a different beast.
So what's a Philly cheesesteak?
See that stuff. Yeah, see, because by what I just explained, that wouldn't be a sandwich. So if you call a Philly cheesesteak a sandwich, then I guess how can you not call a hot dog a sandwich? I don't know. It's worth me sitting and thinking and eating a bunch of those so I can determine that.
Darius had an interesting take on it.
Well, I initially thought at first, okay, well, no, it's got to be like a burger. It's got to be it can't be skinny like a hot dog. It's got to be something, you know, kind of flat. But, I mean, the Philly cheesesteak was a different example. I'm at the point now, you know what, if it's between two buns, man, it's a sandwich, man. We're going to call it a sandwich.
Yeah, I feel that.
That's the thing, is I'm of the opinion, I'm very liberal on this one, where if it's between any two forms of starch, I think it's a sandwich.
Okay.
A taco could be a sandwich. It's a different type of sandwich, but it's still a sandwich. Because the tortilla is a type of bread. And you can go even deeper than that. But I was interested to hear your take on that one, Calvin.
Never been asked that one before.
It's an interesting take on a long, hotly debated question. The next question we have, though, is coming back to play for your hometown team. It must have been pretty awesome for you. I can't imagine what it is. You know, the only person who can really understand that is a guy like Sam Ehlinger. What was it about playing for the Longhorns that lived up to the hype, and what didn't?
Yeah, so, I mean, for starters, let me say that it was a complete blessing the way it turned out, you know, because it wasn't a part of my decision criteria that, you know, coming home to Austin, that I didn't factor that in when deciding. But it's everything else that I decided, you know, ultimately led me to picking Texas. So it was beautiful that I got to come home to my home city. What lived up to the hype, no doubt. I mean, so thinking about a game, playing in the Cotton Bowl, where we were in that year, I think we were 5-1 going into the game, playing undefeated OU. That game was, I think it blew the hype out of the water, to be honest. That was probably one of my best college games to be a part of, that and the Sugar Bowl. And so I think that definitely lived up to the hype. You know, I think one thing that I did learn at Texas is, and I think I brought this unique characteristic, not having been at an elite football program prior, was, you know, all the media attention and all that stuff, you know, it really can, like, gas people up, or I'm not sure what the wording you want to use is, but it makes you believe things that are, you know, not real or just illusions, because, you know, you get on social media and what's said on social media is strictly opinion. There's people just, you know, spit out whatever they believe to be true or not to be true. But it's just so interesting, especially in the social media era we live in, how much that affects, you know, what you think about what's actually happening. And so, you know, it's something that all teams have to fight, especially any team that's in the spotlight. But it's just thinking about hype in general, I would say that both did and did not live up to the hype, because sometimes the hype is real and then sometimes the hype is fake, because the hype is always opinion. So, and usually the hype is opinion before there is an opportunity for there to be fact, right? It's just like a prediction or something like that. So, you know, there's good and bad with it, right? Like if you're playing well, if you're winning in the big games, if you're performing, then it gives you an opportunity to be seen, and, you know, visibility is good for any college football program. But, you know, there's another side of that coin, which, you know, we got to see both of those sides. So, you know, I look back on it and I think it was amazing to come back home, in a sense. I was still in Texas when I was at Rice, but to come back home, to play in front of my family, play in front of the kids that I grew up with in high school, it was beautiful to do that.
Calvin, so we mentioned that you spent a few years at Rice before you transferred over to Texas. What do you think, what were some of the differences, would you say, were with your experience at Rice University compared to, say, the University of Texas? Obviously, we know, you know, they're obviously a bigger stadium, way bigger stage as far as playing football, but just being a student athlete there in general, what were some of the differences between playing at Rice and playing at UT?
Sure. I mean, I would say the first one, the most noticeable to me when I got here, is that there's really a premium put on football and athletics in general on campus, and that's something you didn't see as much at Rice. Whereas Rice, you have, you know, all of the emphasis is put on academics throughout the entire campus. And it's not that is not an emphasis at Texas. It surely is. It's one of the better schools in the southern region of, you know, America. But the emphasis and the appreciation that the students and the faculty and everybody has on campus for athletics, that was a huge difference for me. And, you know, that's something I wish Rice had more of.
Probably had a bigger budget for equipment and stuff too, right?
No doubt.
Hey, I'll never forget. I was so, of course, you know, at Texas and stuff. I mean, I'm like, hell, you can swap out equipment, you can swap out stuff whenever you want, pretty much, because, you know, they got it. I got the UNT one time, and I ripped my glove, had a big hole in my glove. I went to switch them out, and the equipment guy said, we can try to stitch them or something, but that's about it. That's when I realized, like, wow, like, this is still a Division I program. But, yeah, there's levels to this, man. So I was, yeah, it's definitely, so whereas I went down, I had a culture shock, like, damn, this is the ghetto, this is the struggle. You went up right. to, you were living luxurious. So, yeah, it is, it's two different worlds, and it's hard to believe that they're both, you know, they're playing at the same level, but it is different sections for sure.
Yeah, two different worlds is a great way to put it.
Well, there is one thing that's interesting about the difference between Texas and Rice. There's one real big difference, and I have to ask you about it. Did you like the Texas band or the Mob better?
Okay, I like them both for different reasons. So Texas, well put together, uniforms all looking crisp. I mean, you know, they're gonna come and they're gonna show out. They're gonna be aesthetically pleasing, all that. But the Mob, you gotta love the Mob, because the Mob is ruthless, mm-hmm. and they don't care. They don't care. They really are not considering anyone's opinion except for, you know, their collective own. And you know, there's some savages in the Mob, so that's why I would say I appreciate the Rice Mob.
Oh, I love the Mob, absolutely.
So, hey, Calvin, transitioning back to your time at Texas, at what point was there ever a time heading into the Red River Shootout, heading into the Sugar Bowl? Of course, you know, you got more practices leading up to the Sugar Bowl, but that week leading up to the Red River Shootout, what was your feeling heading into that game? And did you really think y'all had a chance? How did you think everything was going to go?
Yeah, I mean, so that whole week, from the very beginning of the week, you know, I think the coaches have put a premium on keeping your heads down, keeping your eyes out of whatever anybody else is saying, and trying to just focus in on winning the next game. And that was our whole, you know, mantra that year. It's always about winning the next game. And so we knew it was going to be a big game. We knew it was going to be an undefeated team. We knew it was going to be, you know, foreshadowing for the end of the season as far as, you know, Big 12 title, all that stuff. So, but I think the beautiful thing about it is that in practice, out of practice, when we're all just hanging out, we all had this understanding that, hey, this weekend is just about winning another game. And so we weren't, you know, I don't think guys were caught up in the opponent per se. I think guys were more focused on let's win the next game. And then we got another game to win next week. And then, you know, we knew that after we won the game, after we accomplished that goal, we can think about, you know, all these grandeur things that we can do. But we have to win the next game. You can't put the cart before the horse. If that makes sense.
At that Red River Shootout game, have you ever been a part of anything like that? I felt like
no.
Both years, I felt like football games are long, man. You know, it drags out your time. I felt like both of those games, those Oklahoma games, felt like they lasted about 45 minutes.
No, I was going to say, I had never been a part of a game like that. The closest thing I will say, when I was at Rice, my first year as a redshirt freshman, I started in the second game of the season. We played Texas at DKR. And that was the biggest game to date because, you know, right, we were super underdogs, obviously. And, you know, we came in and Gerard Hurd was still the quarterback. Fun fact, Gerard Hurd, he was the quarterback when we went. I was at Georgetown High School for my sophomore year. We went undefeated and went to state. And we played Denton Guyer, and their quarterback was Gerard Hurd. And he won that game for them, literally, won that entire game for them. It was just a funny moment. I talked to him briefly about it, but it was a funny moment. Coming back to Texas, we ended up losing to them, and he was the reason why I came in the second half. But yeah, it was the Red River Shootout was insane. I mean, you look back at even as soon as the game's done, you're like, man, that's it, fine. And there were we had some ups and downs, and at the end of the game, it was all on the line, obviously on that Dicker kick. And you know, you're getting down your stance, and like, man, this game does not feel like it's been that long, even though we've been out here for a couple of hours. It shoots by, man. But super cool to get that big victory.
And then on the other big game of that year was the Sugar Bowl. Going up to that game, you're going up against Georgia, who was just missed their shot at the national championship run. They're the heavy favorite. You go into that game. Were you at all intimidated? And when in that game did y'all realize, oh, we're going to win this game?
I'll tell you this. That whole week, all of the weeks leading up, but really the final week before the game especially, I think me and the entire offensive line specifically, we were pissed off because everything that anyone said about Georgia was going to be their physicality and they're going to dominate the trenches, they're going to come down to a trench battle and, you know, they have the upper hand, blah, 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 blah. And I think that just really ticked us all off. And so we came in, I think in the first quarter, when we felt them the first few drives, I mean, as an O-lineman, you'll definitely understand this, but when we felt them the first two or three drives, we realized that they weren't going to be able to hang with us, especially in the run game, because we were pounding them. And when we were coming off the ball, they weren't matching us every play. Like, you know, that for a third down or something, for one play here, or they might've had spurts, but they weren't matching us physically, and we could feel it. You can feel it as an offensive lineman. If a defensive lineman is matching you physically. And so we knew that from the beginning. And so we came on the sideline and told Coach Han and Herman, we were like, hey man, they can't play with us up front as far as physicality. They're not here with it today. And so I think we felt that really early on in that game. And then, you know, you win the trench battle, it's going to be really, really difficult to lose that game. So we were thinking we were going to win pretty early.
Y'all definitely brought it to them. So my freshman year, that's the year they had the bad season. There was no bowl game. They punished us all offseason, whatever. That following year, we went to San Diego for the Holiday Bowl. And shoot, we had a great time out there that week out there for Christmas. What was it like being down there in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl? You know, what was that experience like? How was everything during the week? How did y'all stay focused down there, man?
Yeah, New Orleans, Bourbon Street, that whole area, I learned, is pretty crazy on its own. But, you know, bringing a band of, you know, however many Texas fans were there too, made it even crazier. And so I think it helped us being, you know, charged up, or, you know, having our energy rise a little bit because we were so mad about, you know, people not really giving us a shot and counting us out, because it helped us not be distracted by the other stuff. And we got to save those you know, that focus for all the fun stuff for after the win and after the game, specifically prior to the game. But then once we won, it was after the victory. So it made it even better to enjoy all the fun stuff in New Orleans. But yeah, crazy environment on its own. And you add a bunch of Texas fans, you get something that I don't even know how you describe. Pretty insane.
So between that game and the Red River Shootout, was there a particular play or anything that really stood out? The celebration afterwards, what was it that stuck out about either one of those games?
Yeah, I'll say in the Red River game, what stuck out to me were two moments. One moment was we had tossed, I forget what the actual play was, but we tossed the ball to Lil Jordan on a third down, and he got hit pretty early. And Lil Jordan is already pretty good at running through contact. Still is, man. Shout out my boys with the Saints right now. But we had a herd of linemen just run up and push them.
Came the culture up, play.
Exactly. The culture play is what they call it, man. But that was, we were in the huddle going crazy for that, man, because I think Pat got over there, and it was just, that was a cool play, man. So I remember that vividly. And then I also remember after the game, I don't know if you guys have seen this picture. If not, I will send it to you, Will. But there's a picture I had posted of me running right after we kicked the field goal. Shout out Cameron Dicker. Right after we kicked the field goal, I came and ran and jumped and, you know, threw my hands kind of in a celebratory way in the air. And I think that might be the highest I've ever jumped, higher than my vertical. My vertical was already pretty high. It was like 31 or something. But, yeah, when I jumped, if you look at the picture, it looks like I was flying, man. So I also remember that moment.
So what you're telling us is you got that picture framed in the house somewhere. You're going to blow it up and show your boys.
I didn't know that you did, but I 100% have that picture framed. It's huge. It might be as big as me. Put on the wall.
I say you got to, because you know they're not going to believe you when you tell them, so you got to be able to show them proof.
See? This sounds like
no one. All right, last – right. of course, yeah. We know ended up going 10-4, playing the Big 12 championship, et cetera, et cetera. What's something that maybe, you know, went on behind the scenes, you know, a little inside nugget that, you know, the fans may not have been aware of? Of course, nothing negative or anything like that. But what's something maybe folks that didn't know what was going on during that season that that maybe something that not many outside the program would know? You either overcame it or whatever to end up still winning double digits that season.
Yeah, I would say, you know, after we lost, and, you know, this, so imagine this, right? I come from a Rice program. We didn't win many games. I mean, I played well, but we didn't win many games. So, you know, I come in, we have high expectations. We got all these pieces coming in. You know, my one of my best friends now is going to be a groomsman at my wedding. Trey Watson came in. We had all these pieces coming in, and we were putting something together. And then we came out and we lost right off the bat to Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there was a little bit of a shock. Like, guys were kind of like wide-eyed, and it was like a reality check. And I think, you know, on the outside in, you know, people look at the result and they just, you know, they have an opinion about a result and then they move on. Like, they're just, okay, they put you in a category, right? You lost to Maryland two times in a row. Okay, whatever. This
right.
is what I'm talking about. People go up and down, right, based on the wins. But I think in the program, what I clearly saw, and this is coming from someone who came from literally we didn't win. We hadn't won games and it's been a while. What you clearly saw is like a wake up call to guys. Like they were like, whoa, hold on. All that talk, all that noise, the noise does not carry you to victories. And so, but you saw the entire roster feel that way. Not just old guys, not just guys who've been there, whatever before. You saw young guys who came in and they were excited and they wanted to do something big. They realized, everybody realized so quick, hey, the noise is nothing. It means nothing. Like it absolutely means nothing because we rode the noise to a loss. Our very first game of the season, we rode it to a loss with all this hype we had. And so there was a clear difference in the team that played before that Maryland game and the team that played after and how we played, how we practiced, how we thought, how we acted during the week. And man, I think everybody got to see it and that was great. They got to see the results of that. But being on a team like that, man, it's just a feeling. I mean, you'll know this too. Like you've been on teams, you'll never forget the feeling. And sometimes it's hard to figure out how to get that feeling again because, you know, it's a specific set of people on a team, guys on a team, and you never can have that exact mixture again. Everybody gets old and changes, people change, whatever. But I'll never forget that feeling that, oh man, this is brewing. Like after that first week, I'm telling you, we snapped into something, man. And so, you know, again, we had some moments we wish we could get back that year. Some losses that were just crazy. West Virginia, Oklahoma State. I can't get those losses out of my mind sometimes, but still so happy and proud of what we were able to do, man. I hope we started something that'll carry over into this year.
Well, I do have one question about that Oklahoma State game, which is what happened leading up to that Oklahoma State game? What happened on the field? What was the problems that really manifested on the field that, you know, looking back on it, you're like, yeah, that's the reason. And I guess the same thing for the Big 12 championship as well.
It's tough. I think, I think the week of preparation was good. I feel like every week we had that year was very, we had solid weeks of preparation. I think when we got on the field, during the game, it's like we got into some kind of rut in the game. You know, it's always tough. Different position groups are trying to figure out, you know, what the issues are. But it was a winnable game in the end to me. So if you just section off the fourth quarter, we just didn't make enough plays to win the game. And that's unfortunate. And you hate it. You wish you could get it back, right? Because that was a winnable game. West Virginia was a winnable game. And the Big 12 championship, I think, was a winnable game. So it's tough, but I can't pinpoint it exactly. But like I said, the last quarter of the game, we just didn't make enough plays to win.
Just while that season is fresh in my mind, I have one last question about that season. What was it like during the Iowa State game when all the lights came on in the stadium? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And then they were playing. I forget what song were they playing when the lights came out. Living on a Prayer. Yeah. That was really cool, man, for senior night. I had so many moments that year where I just got to feel like the environment of being in DKR, and that's why I'll never forget what it was like to play there. I went back this season during our bye week, and just kind of reminisce, man. There's nothing like playing in DKR, man. Something different about it. But, yeah, what was it like? I mean, me and Trey always talk about this. We looked up and saw everybody putting their phones up, and then you just keep seeing more and more people. It's like, man, this is crazy right now. Like, think about this. We're playing at Texas. This is one of those moments, man. And I had so many of those that year. But another one of those unforgettable moments where you sit back and try to appreciate where you are, even though you're still in it, even though you're still in the moment.
And then my last question about college, and it's leading into your next steps. I want to talk about your time under Tom Herman. What is that guy like on and off the field, and where does he or Herb Hand stand on your pantheon of coaches that you've played under?
Sure. I mean, so let me just say this bit about Coach Herb real quick. Herb Hand is the reason that I came to Texas. He was going to be the reason I was going to go to Auburn. And he, you know, he was the first coach I met on the recruiting trail, came out to Houston to meet me. We went to IHOP. I've always had a lot of respect for him, and I still do. And after playing under him and being one of his players, I have that feeling probably times 10. So great respect for Coach Herb Hand, one of the best coaches I've ever played under. And I'll say this about Coach Herman. I have so much respect for him. You know, people never can pinpoint, like, you know, because he's an interesting guy, right? I mean, there's no, we don't have to BS about it. He's an interesting guy. I feel like all these notable guys are interesting and different in ways, but I think that Coach Herman knows how to prepare you to be on a big stage in a big moment. And it was clear, like preparing young guys to be in that situation. I mean, guys are just out of high school and lighting a fire under you so that you can appreciate what you're playing for and, you know, the things that you're standing on when you're in that moment. Those are the things I appreciated about him. And, you know, you can see that carry over from when he was at Houston. And, you know, he really does know how to inspire guys, I think, in those big moments. And, you know, that's something I've seen that I think unique to guys like him and unique to some other very notable coaches, you know, that have coached this great game. So both of those coaches are very high on my list. Still love them. I can't wait to go back to – I'm going back to Austin 2 weeks, or really a week and a half now, and so I'll see both of them again. But, yeah, nothing but the utmost respect for both of those guys, and they're very high on my list of coaches I've played for.
All right, Calvin, enough of this college stuff, living in the past, reminiscing. Let's talk about what's going on with you right now. So, I mean, of course, playing college, blah, blah, blah. I've got a couple, you know, former teammates, friends that are even still playing in the NFL right now. two questions. The first question would be, you know, has it really hit you yet? At one point did it hit you that you're actually, you know, you're in the NFL, you're a professional football player. You're one of 1,600 guys in the whole world, you know, that can do this. When did that, you know, hit you?
You know when it hit me, brother? This is when it hit me. So the whole, all of last year, you spend preparation, right? You're prepping for pro day, prepping for combine, prepping for this. Then you go to OTAs, you're prepping for the season, prep. When I got to the Broncos, and I got down to my stance. This is no lie. I will never forget this moment. I called my dad that night. I get down to my stance. I'm playing left tackle. Get down to my stance. I look up the pass play. And it's number 58 on the edge looking right at me. And obviously, you know, 58, I'm talking about Von Miller. When I looked up and I saw Von Miller, and I was thinking, Von Miller's about to come off the edge. I'm standing here. I'm the one who has to block him. And I just looked around and I was like, man, I'm in the NFL. This was the dream. Like, this was it. This was it. You couldn't write this up and you couldn't write the story any better for me, man. Like, I'm here doing what I love at the highest level and going against one of the best, getting reps against the best. I got Mike Munchak as my coach, Hall of Famer. I'm thinking, this is it. Like, this is the dream. I had that coming to moment where I kind of slowed down finally after doing this. I mean, because you're always working, right? You're just trying to, because it's in the NFL. Right. There's a reason why they say it's not for long. I saw guys come in one day and get cut the next. So it was one of those moments where I really appreciated it. I thought to myself, this is it. I'm here.
So I'm not going to let you get off the hook this easily. How did that rep end up?
Oh, hey, I'll tell you this, man. Vaughn was kind of chilling on that play. So, you know, I think he was just kind of chilling on it.
Okay. So it wasn't, all right. All right.
So, you know, the quarterback was protecting. He made his throw. It was good. We didn't have pads on. So,
Okay.
Hey, there was a point in time where he didn't have a chill, but, man, Vaughn used to be.
Boy.
I got a question. I've got a different – I get a different answer from different guys that are still playing in the NFL or are still played. So I want to know your opinion on it. Is the game any faster? Is there really a jump in competition, or is it more – about the stuff that goes into preparation, in your opinion? What has it been like as far as that jump to the next level? What is the difference between being in the NFL and coming from the highest level of Division I football like you did?
Yeah, so I will say that there's a notable difference in preparation. So there's no doubt that that's true. I guess the trenches, guys, the ability for grown big men to get off the ball and move quick, move their hands quick. All of that happens at such a faster rate, in my opinion. So, you know, I know people have different opinions about how stuff goes on in other parts of the field, but in the trenches, I think that the physical part of it is even more so true. Now there's a lot of preparation that you have to increase too. Like you have to study rushers and know what you're going against and, you know when there's going to be twists and tendencies and all this stuff. But physically, these guys are not just bigger and stronger. They're like quicker and their minds work faster. So their minds working faster means their bodies react faster. So I think that was the biggest thing out of those two. I think that's the biggest thing. And I'm seeing and are still seeing.
That's good stuff. What are your thoughts on the current CBA negotiations that are going on? I know we're seeing opinions, seeing guys voice their opinions publicly. You know, you're seeing the guys like Russell Wilson, guys that already have their stuff secured, right? So, Calvin, if I'm not mistaken, you were an undrafted free agent. So you fall on the opposite spectrum on this thing. You know, I know Marshawn Lynch was giving everybody a warning a few weeks ago, what months ago was it, when he was like, make sure your chicken's in order, make sure everything's good.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's different for you being on the bottom end of it, being a guy that was undrafted. You don't want any lockout. You need your money. You need your coins. So and it's different with football, because football, again, it's 1,600 of you. You know, it's 53 guys on the roster. In baseball, I think it's 25 guys on the roster. Basketball, I think they got 12. Mm-hmm. How do you get every? You know, you're never going to get everybody on the same page. But what are your thoughts on the collective bargaining agreement, and what is your point of view on everything?
Well, I'll say this, man, and you know, coming from a guy who has an economics background, you know, I made being on the obviously when you're undrafted, you have no guarantees. For anybody who's listened doesn't understand the difference. You don't have any guarantees. Your contract is much less sturdy than somebody who was drafted or somebody who's on their second or third contract. So But with that being said, very money oriented. So I made a good chunk of change and also saved a very good chunk of change. And, you know, this was what I was thinking about, because we knew they had been telling us, since I very first got into the NFL, about the potential for a lockout and the CBA negotiations coming up. And so, you know, I think it's tough. It's tough with everybody being different and everybody, you know, being on different levels mentally too, with how they handle their money and all this, but, doing what's better for the collective, the entirety of the NFL players, I think is what's best. And so I've seen some of the older guys actually, like I was watching a little story that Marquise Pouncey put up today. Guys like that, I appreciate. It's like the guys who already have their bread secure, they're good, whatever. They're still looking back on us saying, hey, we want to help them out, you know, trying to vote for the best of the collective to move forward, because that's going to be the problem, right? You got the two extremes, and the NFL and the owners, they know what they're doing. They're trying to they're indirectly trying to divide us, because they know it's going to be hard for guys who don't have as many guarantees to agree with the guys who do, if they're putting policy in place that's going to, you know, split us decision making wise. So I know it's strategic, and I think if we can band together, and I think a lot of guys have been doing that, saving their money, being prepared to, you know, work as a unit. When you can work as a unit, you can make decisions as a unit and reap benefits as a unit. And so I think that's what we need to do as NFL players. And, you know, I think we have to understand how much leverage we have now versus, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. Especially the older you go back, you'll see that we used to not have any leverage damn near. So, with the leverage we have, I think we need to make moves and intelligent decisions in our own lives with our own finances, so that we can collectively make a decision that will be better for the progression of the NFL players collective as we move forward. And so that's what I think we need to do, man. So, you know, I know what they're doing. They're going to keep, they need to give us health care forever, man. You see too many guys that go through things years and years later, and they have no help. All this stuff, man. So they're leaving way too much on the table. I hope we don't vote this in. I know our representatives at Denver did not vote for it. So we'll see how it proceeds, man. But definitely Marshawn Lynch was right, man. Save your chicken. Make sure your chicken's in order.
Yeah, you have Earl Campbell. You can look at when you come to Austin and see just what the game does. But yeah. I'm going to go ahead and take this into a lot happier route here. We all know about the Rubik's Cube. We all know about it. It was the commitment announcement to Dakota, Texas. It's sort of you know, your thing. But I want to know, what are other hobbies that you have away from the field that people just don't know about? What is it, you know, whether it's video games or collecting, or what is it?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the Rubik's Cube is a big one. But you know, in my free time, I like to watch Law & Order SVU. Anything that gets your mind thinking is probably something I like to do, whether it be puzzles or word games or anything like that. I play some Fortnite, so Fortnite and Call of Duty, a little bit of 2K. So if anybody wants to get to work in that, hit me up. I'll give you my ad. We can go toe to toe. I'm pretty nice on Fortnite. Let's see what else. I'm getting married, so I guess my hobbies are changing, and I'm kind of morphing my hobbies in with my fiance, which has been really cool to see. And she's a super smart doctor. So we've been playing a lot of Bananagrams recently, which is tough, losing to your fiance in Bananagrams a lot. But trying to change that, man. But that's been kind of tough for me. Actually, I hate losing. But, yeah, there's a couple things, man. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I like to eat. Every old lineman will tell you that. It's a hobby for us. It's what we have to do, but it's also a hobby for us. I love to eat.
Well, how's the food compare in Denver, you know, to what you had in Austin?
I'm going to tell you right now, man, nothing's going to compare to Texas. And they try to make these barbecue spots in Denver, and there's no disrespect. Like, I know they're trying to make an effort and, you know, provide their citizens there with an option, but it's not going to compare to Texas. Texas food is the best. Now, you can't get better, and especially Austin, Houston, some of these big cities, you're not going to beat it. So,
well, have you at least gone, you know, hiking in the mountains or, you know, snowboarding, snow skiing while you're up there?
I haven't been snowboarding, snow skiing yet, and that might be for the best, so I don't get dropped in my contract if I get injured. But we did go up to the mountains one time. It's beautiful up there. I mean, I know it's kind of hard to breathe. You got to get used to the elevation, but
and the altitude, but the mountains.
Is it hard to breathe because of the elevation or other stuff?
Yeah, when I got there, it was about a week or two. It took me about a week or two to adjust to the altitude. But to your point, it disperses, I would say, into the air. But so you know, maybe that's a reason in some concentrated areas, but not in general.
Yes, I just want to know. I used to spend my summers up in Colorado and hiking Rocky Mountains. But Darius, you want to ask the question?
All right, the final question, Calvin. We're gonna let you get out
Talk
of here.
Talk to
man.
Me, brother.
Knowing everything that you know now, it's a 2-part question. Knowing everything that you know now, is there anything that you would do differently? And also, say you were, I don't know, say you were at the podium, you were the speaker for all of the high school athletes in all of America. They're tuned in, listening to what you have to say. What would your message be to high school kids today about what it truly takes to be successful, what it truly takes, especially with, you know, the landscape changing now as far as, you know, it's kids getting more and more stuff earlier and earlier. What would your message be to them about what it truly takes?
Yeah, so I know 2 parts. So I'll say first, looking back on it, I'm of the mindset that everything happens for a reason, that God puts you in places in specific time frames so that certain things can come about. So I don't think I would do anything different, man. I look back on my life, even moments, whether it's a high or whether it's a low, I think all of them have led to me being able to be where I am at now. And I'm blessed to be in the state I am now physically and also mentally. And so, you know, I look back and I'm very appreciative for all my highs and my lows. And so, I don't think there's anything I'd do different. But to your second question, which I think is a great question, especially given, you know, how much kids are given now at a much younger age, I would say this. It seems to me like mental toughness is something that's fading away. The more younger kids I see in athletics, because they get rewarded so often. And I think that in order to really take your game to the next level, take whatever your passion is to the next level, I think that taking away the emphasis that should be put on acquiring mental toughness and training yourself to have mental toughness. It shouldn't be that way. I think there needs to be a premium on mental toughness, being able to, you know, go through something difficult and just manage through it and not give up, not have an easier way out, not, you know, take the easier way out, not, you know, cry about it or like I said, give up before. I think that, you know, that is what builds character. That's what builds strength. That's what really gives you the tools mentally and physically to get through something is when you've gone through something before. And so, you know, there's so many things I've been through, so many difficult situations I've been through that after going through them, I realized how important it was that I did go through it for what it taught me and how much stronger it made me. And so that's what I would tell young kids, man. I'm coming back to Austin, Texas, March 7th and 8th to host my first legacy football camp with one of my best friends from college. And, you know, that's what we're going to tell these kids too, man, is you're going to have to go through, you're going to go through difficult things in life regardless. It's inevitable. So training yourself at a young age to be able to go through it, stick with it, whatever it is that you're actually going through, stick with it and come out the other end victorious. That's what teaches you to be strong. And so, you know, that's what I would tell these kids, man.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Thank you so much, Calvin. It's been awesome talking to you again, man. But is there anything else you want to highlight before we get out of here?
I don't think so, man. I mean, I think everybody knows at this point I love Texas. Always love coming back and giving back. Austin is my hometown, but, you know, I went to Georgetown, went to Westlake, went to Rice, love Houston. I love coming back to Texas. And so, you know, any way I can represent Texas as a state and my universities and schools as I move forward in my career, I'll be trying to do that the best way I can, man. But I will never forget about the state of Texas, boy.
Good stuff. We're not forgetting about you, but thank you, Calvin, for coming on, man. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and good luck in the NFL, man. And hope y'all have a great season next year.
Yeah, thanks,
always,
Calvin.
Brother, thanks for coming. No doubt. Appreciate you guys.
And with that, I think that's going to end it up for us. You guys have listened to the 4th and 5 podcast, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. You guys can find my man, DT, Darius Terrell, at DTerrell, TERRELL0505. Or you can find both of us on thefootballbrainiacs.com. That's texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. Pick your favorite one. We're on it. On that note, thank you all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.